What the Tech is brought to you by Rocket Loans, part of the Quicken Loans family of companies. Offers personal loans from $2,000 to $35,000 by visiting rocketloans.com/whatthetech. That's rocketloans.com/whatthetech. Hover. Find a domain name for your idea. Go to hover.com/WTT and get 10% off your first purchase. Again, that's hover.com/WTT. Hover, domain names for your ideas. Everybody, welcome to What the Tech. I'm Andrew Zarian. We are not in our traditional studios today. I'm broadcasting from Los Angeles because I have to fix the studio that I have not fixed yet. And we're encountering a multitude of issues doing this. So this is our best attempt at this. I don't know if you guys are hearing me clearly. I don't know if I sound terrible. I will not sound as good as I normally do in my studio. But with me, as always, someone that will be doing a lot of talking today. My best friend in life, Paul Theroux.
Wow, I feel bad for your life.
You should feel bad.
How are you, Andrew? Usually,
I'm in a hell zone right now. This looks beautiful, by the way. This is all set up so beautifully in the studio. This is like a real deal radio setup, and it is not really set up at this moment to be doing what we're doing, which is amazing, right? We could kind of talk about the technology shifting along the ways, but Paul is sending vMix call into our main studio in Queens. I'm in Los Angeles. I'm sending it via Skype onto another computer that's across from me here, and that's sending it back to Queens to a Skype computer into vMix.
You know, you're not making a good case for distributed gaming, Andrew.
Oh man, it's gonna be a very interesting conversation. Now, Paul's going to do a lot of the explaining here because I was in and out of the event. Google just had an event, for people who don't know, for streaming gaming, essentially, through a multitude of different devices and different formats and different availabilities. So this is a very interesting time, and this is something that Microsoft has been pushing. This is kind of the future of Xbox in a way, right? And essentially all gaming, this cloud computing concept, it's not something new. We've seen it for a long time. We've seen it attempted. Mm-hmm. Poorly, and this is Google's stab at this. So, Paul, we're going to talk about this, obviously, and a whole lot more stuff, but I want to remind everybody, if you enjoy the shows that Paul and I do, I'm going to be recording a lot of the behind-the-scenes stuff of this setup that I'm in right now in LA, of breaking this down, and then I think what we'll do is we'll combine that video and then post it on Patreon, so we don't really suffer more with this entire process. Let me see if I could show you guys another shot here. So this is kind of my view into things here. So I'm going to be doing a whole breakdown of this machine here, this console, and everything else that we're doing on patreon.com/whatthetech. If you enjoy the show, you can fund us over there and check it out. I know the audio is compressed because I'm on Skype right now, but hopefully we'll get everything fixed and then I can show you the end result once the studio set up. So, Paul, let's go into this event.
Okay. Sorry. Let's go into this event. So we have suspected for quite some time that Google was going to announce a game streaming service, possibly some hardware. We saw last week there was a leak of a controller design, which they did really announce. It wasn't clear, you know, what form this thing would take, whether Google intended to be the backbone for mid-tier and smaller game makers, you know, who can't afford to have their own networks like EA and Activision might have or whatever. Or whether they'd be kind of a pure play cloud-based competitor to Microsoft X Cloud and whatever Sony has coming next. And now we know. So Google Stadia is the name of the service. It was Stadia. Codenamed Yeti. Yeah, Stadia. And it is Google is taking on Microsoft X Cloud head to head. And they made an interesting case for a couple of things. You know, the scale of their network, their ability to have edge nodes near where people are, and that will benefit them from a latency or connection speed perspective. They talked about their streaming test, right, of the Assassin's Creed Odyssey game last fall, where they were able to achieve up to, they said, 1080p graphics, 60 frames per second on different types of devices. Interesting. And they promised that with Stadia, they would be able to hit 4K, 60 frames a second, and at some point, 8K, 120 frames per second. And so we'll see. And the idea here is that, you know, in the same way that, you know, with cloud computing, you can kind of scale your deployment of resources much more efficiently in the cloud. They can do so with gaming as well. And, you know, you buy a console in 2018 or whatever, and that thing never improves. It never changes. It never really gets better in any way. You know, more games come out, but you're limited to whatever the technical abilities of that thing are. Whereas with a cloud service, you know, that stuff can be improved on the back end. You know, the other thing that's kind of interesting about that is a problem I have seen on the Xbox. So, for example, with Xbox One, I'm digital only. I buy all my games online. I download from the console. I play them. I've never bought a disc. I've never installed a game from a disc. But I've noticed, I mean, many, many times, day one comes along. I install the game. It takes forever. And there's an update. And that update is as big or sometimes even bigger than the game update. That update could be tens of gigabytes, like 50, 60 gigabytes or more. And over a typical internet connection today, it takes a long time, you know, before you can get into it. And so on the cloud, those games are updated once up on the back end, and you're streaming it. So you get the new code every time you sign in. It's an interesting idea. You know, I think anyone who lives in a rural area, anyone who lives in a place with bad internet, anyone who's ever tried to stream a game, you know, using a previous service like OnLive or whatever, kind of understands the pitfalls here and some of the problems. But, you know, Google as a pure cloud company can approach this from that perspective. They know it's not going to be for everyone right away. They're not going to have an on-prem solution like a console. And they're going to go after that audience, and we'll see. You know, I think if you live in a lot of Western Europe, if you live in a big city in the United States with a fiber or a high-end cable connection, this could be very interesting. You know, I mean, I guess we have to see it really, you know. There's a lot of stuff they didn't announce. Major partners in the form of game studios, there were none other than id Software, which I don't actually consider a major studio, frankly. They talked about having first-party games, didn't discuss any of them. And they talked about working with third-party publishers as well and didn't announce even one of them, except for, again, for id. So a lot of questions. You have to kind of take it at face value. I mean, nobody has this thing in hand yet, so we can't really evaluate it. But I would say overall what they showed off looks promising. And they were far less conservative than Microsoft has been, let's say, about the possibilities of this kind of technology and how fast it could take off.
So essentially, if we're going to break this down, the concept of playing real-time, you know, virtually very, very low latency games on a Chrome browser is a very high goal. But we're going to also be able to play on different devices also, right?
Right, right. Yeah, they talked about PCs and Macs, I think Linux as well, Chromebooks, obviously, Chrome OS, Android devices, and smart TVs as well, although there weren't a lot of particulars about how that latter thing is going to happen. But yeah, they want the game to be everywhere you're going to be. Google's kind of a quirky company, and some of the things they do seem a little weird, and some of them are kind of innovative in ways that are just non-obvious, right? So one of the neat things that they're doing is they'll let you play the games on whatever control you might have, depending on what control you might have that works with whatever device. But if you buy their controller, it connects directly to the service over Wi-Fi. It maintains the state of the game, your position in the game, and so forth, and maintains an understanding of what device you happen to be playing it on it at the time. And so if you were, say, we're using it with a computer, like a laptop or whatever, and then you walked around your house and you have the big screen with a set-top box of some kind, and you say, well, I'm going to play it over here now, and you can make that switch on the fly, and the game just switches over to the different screen. Or on the flip side, I guess you could be commuting to work. Maybe you take a train or a bus or whatever it might be, and you could pause the game and then pick it up again while commuting on the smaller screen with a controller attached and just, you know, kind of keep going. And speaking generally, this is not a new concept. You know, the ability to pick up where you left off is something we, you know, Microsoft talks about with between PCs and phones. It's something that Apple offers with Handoff. It's something we have in the Xbox space in a very limited way with some Xbox Play Anywhere games, right, where you can play them across the platform between Xbox console and the Windows 10 PC. And, you know, it's a good idea for all the obvious reasons, but Google not only is kind of implementing it in a far more broad way, which is just interesting in its own right, but also in a seamless way that connects to the cloud and uses that as the, you know, the connectivity piece, where the hardware, the controller is the thing connecting directly to the endpoint in the cloud. It's an interesting idea. Again, you know, we don't have it to test, but it looks interesting.
Yeah. I want to take a moment to kind of step away from that, because this kind of goes into a much larger discussion as far as what the future of gaming consoles are. Because if Google is able to do this and you're able to deliver via browser, obviously, or even a Chromecast, this tiny little box, and all you need is a controller. The hardware now becomes a very different discussion to have. And I kind of want to touch on that, because this, if this works, right? Let's say Google's able to pull this off, which that's the hope.
Yeah.
If this works, what does this mean for Microsoft and Sony?
Well, Microsoft is creating a very similar system, right? So Google, all of a sudden, we know much more about what Google plans to do. Microsoft is coming up with a similar cloud infrastructure that's called xCloud for now. It will have some other brand, you know, whenever they complete it. They tend to have the same sort of cross-device compatibility, right, which is obviously useful and interesting. They haven't talked about the specifics of state management and, you know, that kind of stuff. And so we'll see what that's like. But like I said, I mean, Microsoft kind of innovated in this space a little bit with Xbox Play Anywhere, obviously. That informs what they're doing going forward. I mean, they'll have something like it. Microsoft is also one of the few companies that has the infrastructure that can compete with, if not exceed, what Google can do. And, you know, we'll see. I mean, there are different ways to kind of measure presence when it comes to cloud computing. And, you know, whether you have data centers or Google was talking about end nodes, which are not the same as data centers. Like, a data center probably has multiple end nodes or whatever it is. I mean, you know, they're kind of mixing apples and oranges when they compare themselves to Microsoft. I mean, actually, when it comes to cloud services, I don't believe that anyone is as well distributed as Microsoft is, but they're obviously using a lot of that infrastructure for other things as well, as, you know, Google will be as well. You know, we'll see. I mean, right now, all we're dealing with is promises, you know, canned demos, ideas. It's just talk. And so, you know, we have other gaming events coming. Microsoft may say something more this week as well. You know, E3 will come. You know, Sony is going to announce whatever they announce, certainly a PlayStation 5. But I would say the one thing that the Sony, Microsoft, and to a limited extent Nintendo trio has to offer that Google doesn't is a vast history in video games, an existing customer base, most of whom are very loyal. People who are playing games today on dedicated hardware, in Microsoft's case, not just on Xbox, but also on Windows PCs, and the ability to kind of mix and match as they go forward, because this game streaming thing will not work for everybody, frankly. It's just not going to work for people, again, who have, you know, high latency or bad internet connections, whatever it is. And so Microsoft has this interim solution they can offer. Microsoft has the potential for what I'll call like a hybrid solution, right, which they offer today to enterprises who have servers that are on-prem and cloud services that are obviously up on cloud. We'll see. I mean, all of these companies have their own experiences and their own capabilities to kind of fall back on. Google certainly has the infrastructure and the science smarts, but they absolutely don't have any experience in gaming. I mean, they brought in two kind of high profile people from, you know, the gaming industry. I mean, congratulations. I mean, anyone can hire a person, you know, like, we'll see. I guess again, we got to not get too over the top excited about this, because it's just not a proven thing, you know? It may ultimately, yeah. maybe it's something where you live, it works great. And maybe where I live, it's like, eh, it doesn't work. You know, we'll see.
All right. I want to take a little break before we continue and thank our great sponsors, and that's Rocket Loan. I'm a big fan of this service. I'm a big fan of this company. You've heard me discuss it for the last couple of weeks. I know a lot of people are paying off their credit cards. Maybe you purchased furniture for your new home, or you're making upgrades to your existing home. Rocket Loan, part of the Quick Loans family of companies, offers you personal loans from $2,000 to $35,000 by just visiting rocketloans.com/whatthetech. That's rocketloans.com/whatthetech. You can check out the offers at any time without harming your credit score. With Rocket Loans, you just simply go and you go through the online process, which is super fast, and you're done. And here's the great thing. It doesn't put a ding on your credit score. I know that this is a big deal for a lot of people. When there's inquiries into your credit history, it sometimes puts a ding on it, and it's actually negative. It's a bad thing for you. These guys don't do that. There's no ding on it. With no prepayment penalties also, and fixed rates. To learn more, go to rocketloans.com/whatthetech. That's rocketloans.com/whatthetech. All loans are made by Cross River Bank, member FDIC. So, Paul, let's. I want to talk to you about hardware a little bit. Is the potential mm-hmm. of a service like this, a game service like this, Android is a very popular platform. Millions and millions of people have it around the world. Could they start utilizing mm-hmm. a little bit of hardware processing? I know this is an Android, but it could just be any phone. On the phone?
Yeah.
You know, make right. that a piece?
They could and they should, frankly. I think the problem with that is they would need to maintain multiple code bases for that, because they'd want to do it everywhere, right? You'd want it on iOS, you'd want it on Windows, Mac, Linux, you know, and then you get into kind of a tricky situation where it becomes very complex for them. Their approach of doing it purely from the cloud makes sense on a number of levels. I mean, one of them ties back to what I said earlier. I mean, it's just, that's who Google is, right? They are of the web. I mean, they came up in the web, and that's the world they've always lived in. And so they view everything in an online sense, you know, and that's for old timers, you know, it's kind of weird. I mean, it's weird for me, even though I never, ever, not once would play my Xbox offline, right? I only play online. If my online connection is gone, I am not playing on the Xbox. But I still, you know, as an old timer, kind of, I look at this stuff and I think, that's kind of weird that you can't, you know, you have to have this internet connection for this thing to work. I obviously that's the trick, but they're also pulling on, like I said, their decades of experience with this kind of stuff. And I think more important are offering some interesting, futuristic, but interesting looks at how they could end some of the problems with video games today, especially on consoles or PCs, right? Where either you can't upgrade the hardware in the case of a console, or you can do it on a PC and it's expensive or complex to do so in order to get better capabilities in the form of higher frame rates, better graphics, HDR, you know, whatever it might be. Once you put something in the cloud, it's essentially infinitely scalable, right? And that's true on a number of levels, right? It's true from just the capacity that they may have to deliver something from them to you. It's true of the processing power and the AI type of stuff that they can apply to the back end. And it's true of the updating thing I mentioned, which honestly is a huge deal. I mean, the ability to update a game, it's not actually instantaneously, but let's say essentially instantaneously, is an astonishing benefit for the same reasons that that's true in cloud computing today. You know, in the old days, if you had a billion people around the world using Office and you found a security vulnerability in Office, you would have to roll that thing out and hope that people got it and downloaded it. The problem is a lot of those people aren't online a lot, or their computers may not have been configured to download updates or whatever it might be. You could never ensure that it happened. And then you have this mix of different configurations of Office out in the world. And that's just for the one version. You know, there's multiple versions of Office as well. And so with this new model, there's one master version up in the cloud. And when you fix it one time and it blasts out, again, not actually instantaneously, but, let's just pretend, essentially instantaneously, and everyone gets it immediately. You know, you ever, I see this on Google News, for example, a lot. I'll be on their page, and in the corner, there'll be a little, it's like a little dialogue, and it says, a new version of Google News is available. I just have to hit refresh, you know, and you refresh the browser page, right, which is sort of what you're going to be doing in this game, right? And the thing has been updated up in the cloud, and that's it. And now I'm in the new version, you know, and they're going to do that to gaming. I mean, there is a legitimate innovation there. You know, it's interesting.
Now, I missed some of it because I was trying to deal with this Fakakta studio here. But, Paul, that's a very New York word. I don't know. You guys in Boston don't
know. No, I'm familiar. Yes, yes.
I kind of missed parts of it. Did they talk about partnering with hardware companies? How are they going to deliver this, let's say, on an Apple TV or on an Xbox? I know that that's not a possibility, but maybe on a Fire TV they could deliver this platform.
They didn't. Not specifically. They specifically mentioned Windows PCs, Macs, Linux, Android, and iOS, I believe. And then and smart TVs. And smart TVs was kind of a vague thing, right? And so smart TVs to me means two different things. The TVs themselves, which have built-in platforms, right, for apps, as you know. And then the set-top boxes you also referenced, like Fire TV, Roku, Apple TV, whatever. So there's nothing stopping Google from releasing an app on all of those things. And I'm sure that they will. You could argue there's nothing stopping them from doing it on Xbox or PlayStation or Nintendo. I mean, I guess, other than the fact that those app stores may have some rules against competing services or something. I'm not sure. I don't actually think that they do, because I know there are things like Electronic Arts, Origins or whatever, they have a service that's, you know, kind of complementary. It's like separate from Xbox Live, but it's their own thing. I mean, so it's possible you could put it on a console, but they talk specifically about putting it on a TV using a Chromecast. And maybe that's their TV solution, Chromecast Ultra, right? So Chromecast Ultra can stream 60 frames a second, 4K HDR. Some of your TV supports those things. I believe it requires an Ethernet connection to make that work, by the way, but whatever. You can make that happen if you want. And maybe that's going to be it. Maybe that is the extent of what they feel they need to cover.
The other thing, Chromecast Ultra is not a cheap device, but it's $70.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a $70 set-top box that essentially is not a set-top box, right? I get in the grand scheme of things, it's not that expensive when you compare it to $140 or $150 Apple TV 4K or $100 whatever it is now.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
When you're comparing it to a Fire TV or a Roku, it's not
cheap. No, there are definitely options in the same price range, and those options include boxes with remotes and, you know, dedicated user interfaces and stuff that you don't get with Chromecast. Yeah, for sure.
So I'm anticipating a couple things. One, did they discuss pricing at all? Okay. When they release this thing, I'm anticipating that they're going to give this thing away for free. If you sign up for 3 months, you get a Chromecast Ultra.
So that was the rumor. There was a report in one of the gaming sites over the last couple of days that anticipated a lot of what they just announced. But one of the things they said that Google didn't say was that this thing was going to be free. Now, what does free mean? I mean, free like, you know, the service is free. Obviously, you have to pay. You can't just, you're not just going to get games for free, right? So you must have to pay for a game or to some capacity. So,
or maybe the opposite, Paul. Maybe the opposite. Maybe the games are free, but the service is not. I mean, there is an argument to be made for a service that you subscribe to, like a you know, OnLive would try on this, right? To one extent. And I know that theirs was a little messed up, but what if you just spend, you know, $14 a month or $12.99 a month, and you have access to X amount of library of games?
Right. So the Xbox Game Pass model. Yes. I mean, it's hard to speculate about something like that now, and this might be why they didn't mention it, because we literally learn nothing about any games that are going to be on there, other than the new version of Doom and that one Assassin's Creed Odyssey game that they kind of test marketed last fall. So, yeah, we don't have a lot of information about the actual games, right? Which is, you know, one of the big components. And if you're familiar with the way the video game world works today, there is a a kind of a controversy, frankly, over the viability of different platforms based on their unique content, right? The first party games in many cases, or third party games that only appear on that one platform, is considered by many people to be one of the defining characteristics of these platforms, right? And so Sony is considered to have a good ecosystem because they have a lot of that kind of stuff. And Microsoft is considered not to have a good ecosystem because they don't. I personally disagree with this assessment, but, you know, whatever. Those two consoles, those two ecosystems have different strengths and weaknesses and whatever. They're obviously competitive at a technical level. So we don't, you know, how does Google factor in? I mean, they don't, right? I mean, right now there are more games on Facebook than there are on this Google thing. I don't know. You know, unrelated to this, there was a news story today about Call of Duty is coming to mobile phones, right, to smartphones. And apparently it's been available since December-ish in China only, but now it's coming to the United States and Western Europe and other places. And this is what we would call like an on-prem game. Like, you know, it's a game. You install it to the phone. It's on the phone. The assets are there. It looks to be about like Xbox 360 level graphics, which is great. But it's an online only game, right? It's multiplayer. And that's interesting because this game, this one game, which is a shooter and requires high frame rates and everything, can run directly on a phone today and probably work pretty well, other than the fact you need to figure out a way to get a controller, you know, connected to it and all that kind of stuff. But is Google going to have anything like that? I mean, and I don't mean, it doesn't have to be Call of Duty specifically, although yes, it kind of does have to be Call of Duty specifically, but there are a lot of game series that are like that, that are these modern shooters, battle royale games, you know, like Fortnite and Apex Legends and PUBG, whatever. They need to have all that kind of stuff. Is Minecraft going to be on there? Are all the big EA sports games going to be on there?
Listen, how about bundling your other services with it, right? If you sign up, maybe you get access to these other services. So if I'm in the Google ecosystem, and I'm paying for YouTube TV, and I'm paying for their music service, or I'm paying for whatever, you know, individually.
Right.
This is just another service I'm paying for, essentially. But
they have
the ability to kind of bundle everything into one.
Right. You know, people want Microsoft to do the same kind of thing. Like when we think about a Microsoft 365 subscription, a lot of people say, you know, this thing can't be complete unless it includes Xbox Live. Maybe Xbox Game Pass, that kind of thing. And sure. I mean, Google being Google, there are integration pieces with their broader ecosystem, right? There's going to be stuff in there where they call them creators. It's the wrong word. Game streamers. That's all they are. The creators are the people who make the games. Those people are creators. I mean, the guy's making honking sounds on a soundboard while he plays a video game, and people are sending him dollars. That's insanity, but I'm sorry, they're not creators, but whatever. There's a lot of those people make a lot of money doing that somehow.
Way more than us.
yeah. So sorry if I begrudge them that a little bit. They don't create anything, and I actually work for a living and I make nothing, but whatever. There is a community of those people on YouTube. YouTube is one of the top tier, you know, game streaming services. It's not as popular as, you know, Twitch or some of the other ones, but it's up there. And obviously YouTube has a tremendous infrastructure, and they're building stuff into it that allow game streamers to interact with their gamers who are watching them, the viewers, right? But also allowing viewers who are watching them to buy the game they're playing, jump into the game potentially at the exact moment in the game where that person is and experience that part of the game. And that's kind of cool, you know. There's a kind of a weaker level of integration with Google Assistant. The notion there being that, as many people who play the modern game have experienced, you know, you get stuck somewhere and you pause the game and you turn to your laptop or your computer and you type in a Google search and you're looking for like a walkthrough of whatever the level is. And those things are out there. And sometimes they're on YouTube and sometimes they're text description walkthroughs with pictures on the web, and they're going to integrate it right into the game. And into the platform, I should say. There's actually going to be a button on their controller for the Google Assistant. You can talk to it just like you talk to a Google Home speaker or whatever. And yeah, that's fine. I mean, if you're on the one device that you have, that's a neat thing. although it's pretty easy to pause the game and switch to the browser and, you know, look that way. But I don't know. For me personally, especially if I'm sitting here and with a computer next to me and a video game next to me, I can pause the game, turn to the computer, do the search, have the two things on screen at the same time, right, which is often helpful. So I don't know. That one to me is less interesting, but I get it. I get why they're doing it. And I guess by building it into the platform, it gives game makers the opportunity to build that stuff into the offering, right? They can make, you know, official walkthroughs and so forth. I don't know.
So let's kind of break down what this means for Apple. You know, Apple has a very different streaming service event coming up. And I do think that the timing is very interesting for a lot of people. Yeah. The fact that Google is now doing their own streaming service on the other side of the gaming platform. But this kind of opens up another discussion regarding Apple and how they drop the ball on possibly streaming gaming and gaming via a set-top box. The original concept for the Apple TV, the new generation, right, was to have this abundant game library brought over that's existing on the phone that could kind of, you know, kind of become like a secondary gaming system for them or a competitor to an extent, and they did nothing with this. The best game that they probably had was DuckTales, the remake. Really, if you really think about it, they had a DuckTales remake that was phenomenal.
Yeah.
That was great.
Okay.
And that was it. Nothing else.
Not the chicken. What's the chicken thing where the chicken crosses the road? What was that called?
Are you talking about Angry Birds?
No. It's like a
Crossy Road?
Yes.
Yes.
They demonstrated that, I think, at the launch. I sort of expected the Apple TV gaming thing to take off a little bit more than it did, right? I do think there's a healthy market out there of casual games. You know, remember, I don't know if they still offer it, but Amazon had a game controller that they sold with the Fire, you know, for the Fire TV. They tried to do a little bit of a gaming push. There's a gaming thing going on Roku. You can turn that controller sideways. It looks a little bit like a Nintendo controller. Terrible. You know, I know it's terrible, but it's designed to work that way. I don't know. I think what Google is doing in gaming is very similar to what Apple is trying to do in video.
Are they?
Also in news. Yeah, in the sense that, conceptually, because they're not just allowing other content makers to come to their platform, their hardware platform, or their OS platform, and make their own apps, right? They're not just trying to corral them into a single interface that makes them easy to find and is good for users. They're actually creating content themselves, right? They're participating in the ecosystem, right? Apple is going to create its own content. Google's going to make its own games. And that's really interesting. You know, I actually, it's goofy because I kind of criticize Apple for doing what they're doing. I don't think it's smart. In some ways, I almost believe that Apple could be more successful doing video than Google can be doing video games. Google's service requires a much vaster infrastructure than what Apple is doing, you know. I feel like, you know, they were talking about it. You know, he said that cloud computing had already transformed music and movies or music and video. And okay, fair enough. You could make a case it's also transformed things like book reading through ebooks and audiobooks, you know, radio through podcasts. There's a whole thing going on there. But, you know, video games, they're just so new to this. I don't know who they attract, you know. Hardcore gamers are going to stick with their PCs. You know, people who like consoles are going to want that. And a lot of times it's going to be for that vague, well, you know, if I had to, I could play it offline with my kids, you know. Okay. I mean, I'm really curious how well this is going to go. And there are some, like I said, there's so many questions because they have literally announced almost nothing when it comes to game making partners.
Because they probably don't have in line, right? I mean, that if they had any great, you know, major brands.
I hope they have some of it in line. I mean, you know, they had a couple of names. They work with two of the big game rendering engines, which is great. It should be relatively easy, I guess, to port existing games.
You know what it is? It works great, and it'll work great, and it'll be everything that they want it to be, because they're not testing in rural, you know, whatever, USA. You know, that's a problem, right, for them, especially you may have great internet connection, but what happens if you have a 20 millisecond latency or ping? Within your own network.
Oh, I see. You're right. Okay, fair enough. But so
you know what I mean? Like if you just you at your home network, you could have 100 megabits by 100 megabits. But if you happen to have some sort of weird latency on that device within the network, you're going to say this thing sucks.
Yeah, when you think about Google as a company and think about some of the weird little things they've done, right? Google is a company that's done something like Google Fiber, sort of in fits and starts, or Google Fi, right, which is their cellular connectivity. You know, in both those cases, what they're trying to do is optimize that part of the experience for its users because they can't rely on the quality of the network. It's the reason they made the browser in the first place. Like, the browser was a bottleneck for them. They felt like they needed to make their own. And so, yeah, it's not going to be good for everyone, for sure. I'm interested in who they pull in. People are going to have mixed results based on the stuff you just said and some other factors. But I just don't know. It's such a weird value proposition. But it's March. I mean, we've got Google I/O's coming up. I would expect they will talk about some of it there. That's in May. And then in June is E3, which is the industry, the industry's big gaming show. And so I don't know that Google's ever played a role in E3 before. This seems like the obvious year to do so.
The way that I see it, Paul, is, okay, are they going to have Street Fighter on this thing? You know what I mean?
That's the thing. I said, are they going to have Call of Duty on this thing? I mean, everyone's going to have that game or games where it's like, well, I'm not even going to have a discussion about this until I know what this is. I mean, having Doom on there or whatever, or some, you know, maybe we get we can look at Ubisoft. What do they make? Assassin's Creed. I think they make are they associated with Crytek? Do they make the Far Cry games? Maybe. I think that's Ubisoft. I don't know. We'd have to look them up.
But, I don't know.
They make whatever games they make. So are they going to, are all of those games going to come into the Google service?
Ubisoft, yes.
Yeah. I don't know. You know, no one knows outside of Google right now, or Ubisoft.
It's amazing. It's a big risk. If a company is willing to take that risk, obviously Google's one of those companies. But Google also has a terrible history of starting projects, then abandoning them. Due to whatever, you know, Google Plus is one that they just could not get right. The list goes on and on. I mean,
I heard that all hour long from everyone on Twitter. You know, I put up a poll. I don't know if you saw it. You know, is this going to be the next big thing for Google or something they walk away from in 2 years? And some 90% of people said it's going to be something they walk away from in 2 years. But if you go back and rewatch this event, which I will do, I think what you'll find is that right up front they addressed that problem implicitly. In other words, no one from Google stood up and said, hey, look, we know we have a bad rep. We often start these things and we sort of walk away from them. You know, I don't think that in the case, Google Plus, arguably, you could make the argument they were going after Facebook and Twitter and it was kind of a big deal and it fell flat, you know, whatever. So they failed at that, fine. But the way they talked about this service right up front and the potential for gaming, the potential impact on Google from sort of a revenue perspective was enormous. You know, they said, this is the next big thing, you know, for us. They seem to elevate it up above the state of something like, yeah, if we stop making phones tomorrow, no one's even going to notice. What's the big deal? Like, I get the feeling they see the potential there and they're serious about it. But like I said, you know, the proof is going to be when we can use it. So there's no, all we can do now is kind of just talk about what they talked about. But I mean, it's kind of hard to say.
Uh, I think we'll only know when it actually works or it doesn't work for them. You know, but it is interesting to look at Google as a company at this moment, because they're doing so many things and they have the hand in everything. You know, everybody's essentially a services business, right? That's what everybody's become. Microsoft is a services business. Apple is a services business. And Google's always been a services business, but they're right, extending right into realms that they have never tried. But when it comes to gaming, it's a very no tolerance for fixing community.
Oh, yeah.
If this thing is not working at 100%, you can't do 98% with this kind of stuff, especially when it comes to latency and to be taken serious. It's a very vocal group of people on the internet that don't have the patience for Google to work through issues.
I agree. I don't believe there is. I mean, aside from like hate groups and white nationalists or whatever, I don't think there is a group on the internet that is that as intolerant. What's that?
Is that how you rank them?
Yeah, pretty much. The next group down is gamers. They're just intolerant, right? And that's why I kind of alluded to that earlier when I was talking about I'm forgetting the exact term for this, content that is unique to your platform. You know, they want there's a really aggressively vocal group of gamers who think that if you don't have first party IP that isn't available anywhere else, your platform is crap. And it goes to the point where Microsoft will say, well, we have a bunch of that, but it works across Xbox and Windows. And they'll say, that's crap, because that's two platforms. And to Microsoft, that's one platform. It's Xbox. But, this is just like they're just intolerant of this. And I, as someone who actually uses and loves and promotes Xbox, I don't understand the complaint at all. This actually technically it probably isn't even true, but actually it's definitely not true, but I'll just use it anyway. You know, a game maker can make a game like Call of Duty, and they can put it on PlayStation and Xbox. Because Xbox One X is technically superior to the PlayStation Pro, it's very easy to make that game look and run better on the Xbox. So the fact that the game is available on Sony or even on Nintendo, it doesn't impact me as an Xbox gamer. The fact that the Xbox plays that game better does, but that is not part of the conversation for these people, because that game is just available everywhere. So who cares?
Yeah.
So yeah, they're going to run into that. There's no doubt about it. There's going to be some hate.
Where is this going in the long run?
Well, this is the future of gaming.
To extend.
What's that?
Do you see this platform of gaming to extend beyond what we have? Like, do you see Microsoft adapting this kind of aggressiveness in streaming gaming? And I know that they're doing
They absolutely are. This is it. This is the end game. This is where it's going, period. Because Microsoft makes consoles, because Microsoft puts Xbox on Windows, and these are legacy platforms that have user bases that and their streaming thing is not ready yet. They can't just come out today and say, hey, forget Xbox. That's the past. The future is all cloud streaming. What Microsoft has to say is there will be both. We're not going to de-emphasize the hardware. We're going to have new Xbox consoles. We're not going to de-emphasize Windows. We're going to keep supporting that platform. But we're going to be working on this other thing. And yeah, that's true for a very temporary period of time. I think the cloud gaming thing is going to take off really quickly. And yes, I like I've said many times, it's not going to work well for everybody, especially right away. I get it. But I think this is going to become the mainstream way that gaming platforms are. And it will transform Xbox into a services-based ecosystem. It will happen to Sony. I don't know what Nintendo's going to do, but if they expect to stay in the game and be anything other than a nostalgia brand, they're going to have to do the same thing. And and here's Google, and there's going to be others. Amazon's going to get into this business, and probably others we don't know about.
So let me ask you, where do you see what percentage of people would you say right now at this very moment? What percentage of people will have a positive experience, and what percentage will have what percentage do you think will have a negative experience with a streaming service like this from people that would be interested in a service?
Yeah, that's hard to calculate. I mean, the first thing you need to figure out, just talking about the United States, for example, and this is something we could probably research, what's the average internet connection speed in the United States, right? Obviously, there's going to be a big gulf between the haves and the have-nots. There are people who have fiber, who are lucky in certain areas, who live in big city like New York, where you have lots of choices. There are people like me who are kind of in between, where I only have two choices and only one of them is any good, and it's okay, you know, cable, whatever. And then there are people in rural areas who don't have any good, you know, anything good, really. I mean, they're working off the cellular connection on their phone, maybe. You know, those last mile people that just get kind of left in the lurch. And so the next thing you have to look, so there's the audiences, right? But demographically from internet connection speed, I guess. But the other thing you have to look at is just like the gaming market. Like, how does the gaming market break down? And not just in size, but in enthusiasm and engagement, right? Because there are a lot of people watching people play video games online. Those people are probably playing those games as well. I mean, my son tells me he watches this kind of stuff because he wants to learn techniques that he can use when he plays the game, right? So, you know, just from an audience size perspective, there's a console market that's a certain size, tens of millions of units. If you add it up together, it's 100 and something million. There are PC gamers that are probably hundreds of millions of units. And vary in capabilities from really high-end rigs that are complex and expensive down to more basic PCs. And then there's a way bigger audience of casual gamers who are spread across online services like Facebook, but mostly on mobile devices these days, like iPhone, Android phone, whatever. And they're playing those little jewel games or whatever, you know, Farmland, whatever, on their phone, standing in line. They're playing Words with Friends, or Wordament, or whatever. They probably don't even think of themselves as gamers, you know. And then there's a tiny little sliver of people play games on Apple TV and, you know, stuff like that. But the cross-section of those people is kind of interesting. The smaller markets, like console gamers, tend to be pretty dedicated to the console. You know, PC gamers tend to be aggressively dedicated to the PC as a gaming platform and to that world, you know. And this is why I asked earlier, like, I don't know who they hope to attract here, right? Because casual gamers don't think about gaming platforms. They have a phone and they download the app and they play the game. They're not thinking in terms of like Google's doing this for me. I mean, they don't really care. So I don't know how they reach those people. And that's the big audience. Hardcore gamers are kind of fixed in their ways. You know, you might have some Xbox gamers who would consider going to PlayStation or vice versa, but I don't know. We're not looking for new, less powerful consoles, you know? And I don't know. And then, of course, even if you found audiences within those groups of people who were like, yeah, I would give this Google thing a try, you know, then you have to find the ones who have the acceptable internet connections, not just connectivity speed, but like you said, from a latency perspective. So what is you almost need AI to kind of figure out what that is. I don't know. I mean, it's some cross-section of people this is going to work for. I mean, think about it this way, Andrew, like, Apple has a really dedicated user base. They are going to have some level of success in video. I have no doubt about it. Just because of that user base, they've had some small level of success in eBooks. They've had a great level of success in music, in cloud storage, great success. You know what they haven't had great success in? Video games, right? They have a Game Center thing, I think it's called now, on iOS, which is supposed to be like Xbox Live, which has gone absolutely nowhere.
Dude, they've had that Game Center thing for a while, and
It's pointless. So I guess with their connection with their audience, if they can't make that work, I'm really curious why Google thinks they could do it. I don't think Google has this connection with people when it comes to entertainment, right? I mean, we trust Google for maps to get us around. We trust Google for search, for sure. We ask Google, trust Google when we have to ask questions and want the answers. We think Google has a nice kind of computer science-y thing going on. And we you know, for based on experience, I think by and large, most people, assuming you trust them, or can tolerate them or whatever, you kind of get the understanding that they're going to give you the right answers and send you in the right direction in the, you know, most efficient way, whatever it is. But, you know, gaming, I mean, or let's put it in a different direction. I mean, do people use Google's Books service, Google Play Books? Do they use Google's video service? And I don't mean YouTube. I mean, Google Play movies and TV. I don't think so. Right. I don't really think that's a thing.
So no, I don't know. It's a thing at all.
YouTube obviously has YouTube is huge.
There's no not loyalty, but there's no drivenness from people to be. You know, you see fanaticness on the Apple side, right?
Right.
I guess it is fanaticness. You see
engagement.
You see a user base that's engaged and very interested in the hardware and the software and very committed. Microsoft too. You see that on the Microsoft side. You've made a career with covering Microsoft.
You see it in Microsoft in productivity services, right? So Microsoft has spent now maybe two decades or more failing at entertainment, right? Zune, Xbox Music, Groove. There's a movies and TV thing on Windows that nobody probably knows about that used to be Xbox Video. That's not available on mobile. You know, I mean, I don't know. There have been at least 11 permutations of Xbox being important again on Windows. Oh, not really. You know, going back to WinG before there was an Xbox, before Xbox or DirectX, you think about when they brought Halo 2 to Windows back in 2006, it would run on Windows Vista. That was the end of that. There's no more of that stuff after that. I mean, I just don't feel, they just don't have that connection with people. Now, Xbox obviously has some connection. Xbox in many ways has failed in the sense that it's the third of the big three, and it has been ever since its inception. But there is there's a loyal audience there, and it's tens of millions of people for sure. There are 64 million people paying for an Xbox Live Gold account, for example. It's not big compared to the 1 billion people on iOS or the 2.5 billion on Android or the 1.5 billion on Windows, but it is an engaged audience, right? I mean, I there's something to be said for people who are willing to spend time and money on your platform. I don't see where Google gets this. This is my big question. I'll try it, but
listen, so will I, right? I'll do it too.
Okay.
Because I'm kind of into this. I'm very interested to see how well it works because this could lead into other things.
Of course.
You know, it's amazing because a couple of years ago when Netflix was dominating and Hulu was dominating, this is reminiscent of people having the discussion of who's gonna give up their DVD player and who's gonna give up their Blu-ray player to get a lesser quality thing over the internet. A lot of people weren't putting into account how bad the experience would be if you had bad internet because of buffering. That existed. You had that ability. A real-time game that's multiplayer.
I think this just came up with you maybe last week. We were talking about Netflix, and just speaking out loud, I sort of said, they used to have a DVD service, right? And they did, of course, and I subscribed to it, right? In fact, I originally subscribed to Blockbuster Video's DVD service, because you could bring them back to the store and get more DVDs, right? It was kind of cool. There was an integration between online service and local facility, which I thought was really neat.
Hey, Paul, you could still get DVDs from Netflix, I believe.
Okay, but I don't want to get DVDs. The point was, at the time, that was the service, right? And then when they started the digital service, we just talked about this. Remember, people forget now, I think, not just the DVD service, which I kind of half forgot, but the fact that when Netflix started out, it was garbage, right? If you want to see how garbagey Netflix was, look at an app like Tubi or Crackle or something like that. That's how bad it was. It was literally a place where direct-to-video, or what we'll now call direct-to-digital movies, would go to die. And so you'd have some small selection of decent Hollywood hits, but mostly what you had, like 93% or 95%, was just garbage sludge. It was terrible. And when it happened, a lot of people said, this doesn't make any sense. If I play a DVD, it's perfect the whole time. There's no glitching. There's no internet connectivity goes out. I can't watch it. It's fine. And then what happened over time, of course, is two things. One, that video service eventually overtook and then dominated the DVD service to the point where Netflix tried to get rid of it, remember? And I think that the DVD service. And all of a sudden, they changed. Netflix got better, right? And they didn't get better by buying more content that everyone else had, like the same movies and TV shows. They got better by making their own content or paying for their own content, right? In the form of great Netflix shows, which all of a sudden now they're one of the best, if not the best, place for original content. You know, shows like Narcos and then a lot of international content that they brought in. So there's a bunch of stuff there. So things can change, and Netflix is actually a really good example, because not only has Netflix changed like the nature of its service, but the service we're now using, the dominant service, was garbage when it launched. It was terrible.
Terrible.
Now, is there as much time, you know, for Google to establish themselves as a gaming powerhouse? I don't think so. They're going up against some companies that have a vested interest in this space and decades of experience in this space, primarily Sony, Microsoft, and Nintendo. And Google could, I still feel like there's this Nintendo thing that someone needs to pluck, that Microsoft or Google or Amazon or someone should partner with that company to bring them into the 21st century, right? That Nintendo maybe is not necessarily interested in hosting all their back-end infrastructure and doing all that stuff, and maybe they need a partner. And that alone would be, I think, be a big bump to somebody. But for the most part, what you're doing...
Are you talking in regards to streaming or just having their content streaming available on different platforms?
Both. Okay.
Say that again, Paul, because this Skype is driving me nuts. I didn't hear you.
Yeah, let's call it both. So okay. I think Sony and Microsoft are both going to take the steps they need to make their platform successful. I worry about Nintendo because their quirky, do-it-their-own-way thing has worked for sure. But it's also kind of diminished the company a little bit, and I think they could have much bigger success if they – and they think too small. Nintendo sometime in the past year was like, you know what? We've moved too slowly into mobile. We're going to put a bunch of our stuff out of mobile. And it's like, that's great. But seriously, you got to look to the future too. It's not just mobile. You know, this cross-platform stuff I think is really important. And –
Well, Nintendo's case, I think the failure of the Wii U was about to change that for them, and that would have kind of catapulted them into that direction. But they've had such success with the Switch. Remember, a lot of it is actual success and functionality, but the other is perception. And perception plays a huge part in this. If people had come out and said this wasn't that great, in reality, you know, they don't have a lot of titles. They're not constantly putting out their own specific stuff.
It's not 1080p. There's all kinds of things with it. Battery life is terrible if you're using it on the road.
But the perception of this thing is that it's way better than it was expected. So people will now talk about it. And I actually really like the Switch. But
I'm not dumping on the Switch.
Here's a thought, Paul, and I want to get your opinion on this. If Nintendo would say, you know what? We have all these titles from the NES and SNES and all these different things. What prevents Nintendo from having a streaming service that you have access to all these games in real time? Because remember, how big are these files?
Okay, so what prevents them from doing it is they don't have the infrastructure to make it happen. That's what I mean. They need to partner with somebody to do it. That's what prevents. They've just moved too slowly to kind of embrace the future. They kind of cling to the past. They have very traditional values. It's kind of a Disney-like company in that way. They're unique and it's cool. Like I don't begrudge them their whole vibe, but they could have seen much bigger success getting their games on mobile than they did by releasing the Switch. And the age of differentiating on hardware, which is the kind of battle that Microsoft and Sony have been involved in, or just differentiating on quirkiness and the unique capabilities of your own console, you know, that can be used with a screen or not, and you know, is Nintendo, and that's cool. But this cloud thing, like I said, this is it. This is where it's going. And I guess the threat for Nintendo here is that they end up like Sega or like Atari, where what they have is this legacy body of work that at some nostalgia level is sort of popular. You know, you can always cart out a new bundle of games and put it somewhere else and some people will buy it, kind of thing. But, you know, Nintendo is an ongoing concern. You know, they need a way to move forward with not just their old stuff, but with their new IP. And Microsoft's doing it and Sony's doing it. And Google doesn't have anything. And I'm really curious about that. But Nintendo's not doing it. And I don't understand it. And so, I don't know. I feel like Nintendo, if they're not careful, they're going to get left behind.
Yeah. Something interesting I wanted to touch on before we wrap it up. And this is something I've spoken about, how streaming services would take an advantage, especially with sports and stuff. On Sony announced today, and you have it on Throwout.com, and I found this very interesting. They're going to be offering multi-view angles for PlayStation View on the Apple TV. Right. This is kind of the future of sports, in my opinion, when you sign up for a streaming service to allow you to have multiple camera views where you kind of control what's going on. Yeah. What do you make of this? Because I'm very much interested in this, because I really think this is the future of sports broadcast.
Yeah, so I first of all, I think this is an awesome idea. Apparently, this is available already on PlayStation 4. I don't use the service anymore, and I never used it on the console, but good idea. They were smart to tie it to the March Madness, right? Because that's the type of thing where you'd want to have, you know, maybe four basketball games going at a time. It's neat. It's like watching the Red Zone or whatever. It's a really good idea. This is another thing that's come up a bunch when we've talked about these cord cutting services, is one of the things you lose when you leave cable is you don't have a single remote that works with everything. And so everything has its own way of doing things. So if you put YouTube TV or DirecTV Now or PlayStation View or whatever it is on a Roku or an Apple TV or an Amazon Fire TV device, whatever it is, you lose the ability to do simple things like go back to the previous channel. Right. In many cases, maybe that thing does exist somewhere. I haven't seen it personally. Whereas all cable TV, you know, remotes have a, you know, that button that lets you go between the last two or maybe three or four channels. And that's when you're browsing around TV channels or you're switching between the two football games that are on or between the whatever number of NCAA basketball games are on this month. That's what you want. The commercial comes, you like click and you're right back. Right. And you lose that on consoles with these services because actually Sony does have a remote, but let's say like YouTube TV doesn't have a remote, right? That works everywhere, right? They don't have a remote that works anywhere, as it turns out. I think that kind of thing is missing and needs to be figured out by the Rokus of the world who make their own remotes, right? That they need to have that functionality built into the remote and they need the cord cutting services to use it. But this thing is it's not perfect. It doesn't work in all scenarios, but for sports in particular, the ability to have multiple streams going at the same time, which I guess you can mix and match between recorded shows and live shows and whatever. It's cool. You know, it's just a great idea. What did we have before? Yeah. Like pitcher in pitcher, basically. I mean,
pitcher in pitcher. Yeah.
Yeah. And that wasn't something your cable really supported, right?
Work right. Needed a it was like a special thing you needed to do in the early days, a picture in picture.
Yeah. Picture in picture was always like the dream. Like you had to have two separate inputs. So to kind of test it, you could have something like a DVD playing in the little window, and then your TV was coming out through the big window, and you could kind of see what it looked like. But the truth is, you never really had that true picture in picture experience, you know.
All right, Paul, let's wrap it up. Guys, again, I'm in L.A. right now. I'm working on the studio. We're not going to do the bonus show. What I'm going to do, I'm going to record a couple of video clips while I'm breaking this whole thing down and putting it together and then showing you the end result. I'm going to upload that. If you want access to stuff like that we do, last week's show, people really loved it, and I got two suggestions. One, it's Paul and Andrew breaking down a conspiracy theory and taking the facts and the fiction out. And the other one was What the Hack. People really liked our life hack concept.
Okay.
And then people wanted you to do a finance show. I saw that. Somebody was recommending
finance show. Listen, you will never meet anyone less qualified for that than me. My wife would be quite qualified for that. But no, I am. I don't. I'm a simpleton.
We're coming up with some extra stuff for Patreon. Guys, if you enjoy the show, obviously go to patreon.com/whatthetech. You can fund us there as little as $1 per episode. For all things Paul, go to therot.com. Hey, Paul, you're going to be in New York next week, correct?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, if you're in New York, well, first of all, we're having that event. I don't believe it's full. Yeah. So if you want to sign up for that, you can do that. And that is at, 3 to 4 p.m. Technically starts at 4, goes till 5 or so. And then we're having a meetup at Rettlingham West on Tuesday, March 26th at 6 p.m. that anyone can come to. So if you're in town or nearby and want to come in, please do. I'll be there. Brad's going to be there. Mary Jo will be there. I assume you will be coming.
I will be there. Yeah. We won't be doing a What the Tech next Tuesday. Just letting you guys know. Paul's busy doing podcasts with other people.
Okay. Well, we could do it Thursday, I think.
We do it Thursday. No, we'll do it Thursday. No, we won't do next Tuesday. We'll do it Thursday. Yeah. All right, guys, that's it for this week. Thank you, John. Thank you, Suncast, for producing this. He's a lifeline whenever I'm away or we need the trouble support. He's going to be helping me kind of tear this thing down and make sure the audio and everything sounds great. So we do have a lot of work coming up, and we'll see you all next time, guys. See you later.